B-Pod Studios.
The Mike Missinelli Show. The Fanatic.
All right, it's 3 o'clock hour of the Mike Missinelli Show. It's amazing how karma can swirl out there. Anyway, 3 o'clock hour is brought to us by Corpolis Bakery and Deli, world famous tomato pie, hoagie, party trays, every bit is good. I was at one point uncomfortable with doing the cash giveaway contest in respect for our employees, but guess what? Our station just got a $500 winner. That's right. The 2 o'clock $100 winner. The keyword was event. Brenton Morrison from New Cumberland gets $500. So congratulations to Brenton. Hopefully you put that to really good use.
That's fantastic. That's nice.
Awesome. Yeah.
That's a good feeling.
See, now it makes me feel stupid for even questioning it in the first place.
Your heart was in the right place.
Yeah, you had a noble cause.
Yeah.
So Jay Wright tweeted out something after the game, the Villanova game. Here it was. Jay, and we love Jay, and he was on last week. I love him. I've known him for a really long time. Tears in my eyes watching Coach Mass run off at halftime. That was the essence of Rolly Massimino. So me, snarky ass that I am, I write back, yeah, that and bullying the media. Right? Yeah. So that people, Villanova fans, are coming out of the woodwork to rip me for tweeting that out. It was purely a tongue-in-cheek comment because, frankly, he did do that.
Yeah, that's a fact.
He was a tremendous challenger of the media.
That,
in a way, he was like the Donald Trump of coaching.
Yes, he did.
Rolly was.
And then the Big Five, he just jettisoned that.
Yeah.
That's not a...
Now, listen, he's passed away. By the end of his life, I had made peace with the guy.
That's good.
But I have, like, some great stuff. I think maybe I'll tell him because after that national championship, I think that most people who are around that program would agree that Rolly changed a bit. That gave him a really big head winning that national championship. And I guess it should have. He won a national championship. He forged one of the greatest upsets of all time.
But at the same time, Jay Wright has won two. And he comes on Thursday, and he seems like the same guy.
It doesn't
have to change you.
Winning
two is rarefied air.
It doesn't. No, you're talking about two different personalities. Rolly Massimino was I understand the species. He was a hot-headed Italian-American, right? So I understand the species.
So you're saying a certain level of success can be detrimental for a certain kind of person?
I don't know. Listen. When you have people telling you, oh, you're the greatest, you forced the greatest upset of all time, you're the greatest coach of all time. I guess it's hard at that point to, like, just be humble. Be a humble man. Just a humble servant of the people.
Yeah, but isn't there a line between swag and abuse? still play Temple and St. John's and still think you're going to kill him.
I started covering college basketball for the Inquirer in 1988. Now, this is 3 years after he had won it.
Right.
And in 1988, the Temple people will remember that John Cheney had one of the great teams ever.
Yes.
And that was a team that was ranked number one in the nation for 9 weeks. Now, a lot of that, they got to number one because a lot of people ahead of them lost. But they also beat North Carolina in that same, and they vaulted up to number one. And because they played in the Atlantic 10, they kept winning.
Right.
And so a number one team that keeps winning is going to stay number one. So they were number one in the nation for a really long time. Now, I was not covering any particular team. I was just the college basketball guy. So I would pick and choose. But the Inquirer knew that Temple being number one for 9 weeks was a major story.
Yes.
So every day we had something about Temple basketball, whether it was diagnosing his matchup zone, whether it was a piece on Chaney, whether it was a piece on their assistant coaches, whether it was a big story of Mark Maken, who could not talk to the press, by the way. And I had to do this monster 50-inch story on a guy, and he couldn't even talk to me. So I had to go back to his hometown, and I had to, you know, but it was fun.
Right.
So Rolly, that mounted on Rolly like a bad rash. He couldn't stand the fact that here he is, a national championship coach of just a couple of years ago, and Temple, of all teams, has surpassed me in the importance level in this town, and that got to him.
You know, when I was a kid, because I'm a certain age, I thought Temple was, to me, because remember, if you're coming up and your first, you know, introduction to sports in real time is Temple being number one and Chaney winning,
yes,
and being better than Nova, in my mind, Temple was the number one in the hierarchy. To me, it was almost like the Big Five and like the 4-for-4 plus Temple. That's what it was for me as a kid. Nova was a little off the radar when I was a kid because I come along after Villanova had won. Yes. So I thought, oh, well, Temple's the squad. I didn't even realize that Nova was the squad till years later.
Yes. So he used to harangue me a lot because most of my focus was writing about Temple being number one. It had nothing to do with my against Villanova. Right. It was just that's where the news was. And so we would have these conversations, and he would yell and scream at me, about why I wasn't partial to Villanova, and he went ethnic on me.
What did he say?
He went ethnic. Now, first of all, let me just say, I learned journalism in one way, which is just get the story. Don't pander to anybody. Whatever the story is, you go after that story, and you can't cultivate friendships if you're covering stuff.
Gotcha.
Right? So he went ethnic on me.
And what did he say?
He would go, I can't believe you don't write more positive stuff about us. You're an Italian kid. Right? So he would go there. And I go, listen, bro. I understand we share some heritage here. But I can't write about you because my last name's Italian. Yours is. I can't, I go where the story is. And he just couldn't understand it.
Well, right? isn't that like such an Italian mindset to have?
He reminded me of my father, like hard-headed, and see it one way, and that's the way he goes. So here's the ultimate story.
Mm-hmm.
So they're playing Villanova's playing Georgetown. So I look at the schedule, I go, that's a big game. It's a national TV game. I choose to cover that game. So I go down to Washington, and they're playing at where did they used to play? What was their old arena? It was in Landover, Maryland. Georgetown would play where the Washington Bullets played.
Yeah, I forget what it was called. Yeah, yeah.
All right. So, I was staying at this hotel, this Marriott. It's called the Greenbelt Marriott. So I'm sitting at the bar, and was it the Cap Center? Okay. And I'm sitting at the bar, and I'm having it's late at night. And Rolly had been at a Friday night. They played the next day at 2. So I'm sitting at the bar, and I'm having with a friend of mine who actually is who works for Villanova. I won't put his name out there, right? So we're sharing. I'm the enemy,
right?
I'm the Villanova enemy, according to this head coach,
right?
So he comes in at night at 11:30. He had been out to an Italian restaurant with this whole crew, his coaching staff, and a couple of ex-Villanova players that lived in the area. And they all roll into the Greenbelt Marriott. That's where the team was staying. And he sees me, and he goes crazy. He starts yelling and screaming at me. What are you doing here? You're a Temple guy. I don't want you covering this. Right? So I'm sitting there, and I'm trying to maintain some kind of, dignity here, and I'm not playing into it. And then his assistant coach they're yucking it up, ha ha, and they're having a good old time because he's bullying me,
right?
So I finally had enough of this.
I figured she would.
Yeah. So I call the bartender up, and I say, "Bartender, can you come here for a sec?" And he says, "Yes, sir." And I go, "What is your policy of out of control drunks in this place?" And he goes, "We usually evict him." I said, "Well, this guy needs to be evicted."
You did that? That's great.
Yes. And he went completely berserk. And so his coaches finally, they pulled him out of the place.
Wow. Look at that. That's the ultimate. That's the ultimate.
I know what else to do.
Really, no. You did all you could do. Yeah. So what's funny is, going forward, like when St. Joe's was really good, with Jameer Nelson and Delonte West, and they were number one. And they ended up
I wasn't covering them then.
No. Yeah, I'm saying he would not have liked
that they switched. Oh, especially with St. Joe's.
That's what I mean.
Oh, my God.
But at the time, most of the writers were writing about St. Joe's because they were number one.
Exactly.
He
treated everybody that didn't pander to him. Listen, he was a hard-ass. We all understood it. We used to almost laugh at it at times. All the journalists. It wasn't just me that got treated like that. Right. If you weren't on his side, you were his enemy.
That's tough.
And then, later on, it's smoothed out. But
we
went back and forth for a long time.
Yeah. So think about me 20 years ago starting in the business. When you told me, you didn't tell me that particular story. You told me some of that stuff. I think you bred a lot of that Nova hate that I had. You did. You used to tell me these stories. I'm a young guy in the business. I've been in the business 2 seconds. You're telling me, that Roley guy. And then Kerry Kittles and all during that time, you're telling me about the Nova stuff. You're at least 75% of the reason I don't like Nova now.
Well,
a lot of that's you.
Because of how he acted?
You used to tell me about that. Right? I used to think Nova people are bad. A lot of that came from you.
I get a million stories on him. And they're all, I look back at it now, and they're funny because, as a journalist, we have to bob and weave because you still have to do your job, right? Even though you kind of have a personal, disliking his behavior,
right?
At this point, but
you still got to call it straight.
You know who his go-between was?
No, who was his go-between?
His go-between was Jay Wright.
He was a young assistant.
Jay Wright was a young assistant on the team, and he always called me. He goes, "Oh, Mike, let leave coach alone." I'm like, "Jay, I'm not doing anything. What am I doing?" He goes, "Well, but he was always that way. Like, always wanted to put out fires and make peace. That's the way Jay is.
And that's why he could be a great NBA coach.
Exactly.
Look at that.
All right, let's go to Zig in Frankfurt. Zig, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Zig.
How you doing, Mike?
What's up, Zig?
Ty, first time caller, long time listener.
Thanks, buddy.
All right, three quick points. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't want sports to come back for the reason is, the epidemic, but say like it came back a month from now. It's so hard to get used to something just disappearing and reappearing, especially without fans. With fans, fans trigger the domino effects. Fans bring out sports status.
Yes.
Fans bring out players.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you bring it back with no fans, I'm not motivated. It's just like, okay.
So you see it as part of the whole equation too. It's like, you can put up with it for a while, but then it's like, here comes another pickup game coming my way.
Exactly, because it's like a trickle-down effect. The other question is, even if they do bring it back, wouldn't it be dissatisfying as a fan trying to wander your brain into all these sports at once? Like, now you're trying to watch baseball, trying to watch football,
Watch
basketball.
Yeah, I don't care about that. That's fine. We'll always make time for every sport that's on. I don't think that would be the problem.
No.
No, you'd have time. I mean, they wouldn't, baseball games you can kind of pull away from if there's a basketball game that's more interesting. It's fun. Our seasons collide, right? Like three seasons collide already.
But it's kind of spread out a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, I really think
football collides with the most important part of the NBA. Excuse me. The NBA will be starting. Football collides with the start. Football collides with baseball, the most important part of the baseball season. And then all four sports are going at the same time. Right?
Okay, Mike. Yeah, last but not least, just want to say thank you, and I appreciate for what y'all do, man.
All right, bro. I appreciate you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, because right now, if there was no pandemic, baseball would have started, and the NHL and NBA would all be going. We'd have all three. Baseball would be every day.
Yeah.
We would have all three, and then, like you said, when the NFL starts, baseball's on a stretch run, then the playoffs come. I mean, you got baseball, the most important baseball, and football. Like, we're used to crossover. That would not be a reason. Crossover would not be the reason. There'd be other reasons, like you said, if you don't want the fans. And I'm okay with that opinion. You laid out why. That was the only reason I was wondering.
The
crossover's not a big deal.
It's like, how much would the owners be invested in either? Because the owners, The owners are making revenue off those playoff games. Part of the whole owning a team and is that whole lucrative part of it.
It is.
It's like they're going, we just want to get the games over with. Is that what we're doing here?
But TV revenue at this point outweighs the live gate. And I think all of this is, would it be better than nothing? And I'm okay with someone saying it's not. I'm just saying the most realistic thing looking at the path is there's going to be a time where rich people, pro athletes, actors, actresses, et cetera, have all been tested. But the masses have not been tested enough to fill up an arena. So you could play. There's going to be a setup where logistically it's possible. And then they'll have to make a decision made. And it's unfortunate. And I absolutely wish that every single person in America could be tested. But the way it's headed, that's not going to happen. There's already NBA teams who have been tested and followed up and everything else. Therefore, at the end of this in another month, there will be NBA teams that say, we've all been tested. We could all get together and practice. We could set up a plan to play. But we do not, there's no way enough people have been tested to do that. What do we do? And that's the thing I'm trying to anticipate.
That's the thing. You're still, even if you test everybody and everybody's okay and you play the game, you're still going to cross paths with people somewhere. You know, it's not like you can go in a bubble. All right from the arena, you played the game, you shower separately, and then you go into a bubble. You're still in an environment, in an atmosphere where there's going to be germs.
Right, but in that case, they claim that at that point, you'll have gotten to the peak. You're now flattening that curve, and it's all about limiting. That's why you can still do takeout and other. It's not about eliminating risk. It's about limiting risk. And I think in that much time, you're talking about if 4 weeks from now and then an additional 4 weeks, 8 weeks from now, they may say it's safe enough for the players, but not safe enough to have 20,000. I'm not talking about now. Now it's nowhere close because apparently we're not even to the worst of it. I believe that's a scenario that's going to come, and then it'll be up to those commissioners and the owners to decide. And I think that's going to be a tough decision. Take some money or no money.
All right, let's go Ryan in Lumberton. Ryan, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Ryan.
What's up, Mike?
What's going on, Ryan?
So I got 2 points I want to make. I got a sixer point to make, and then I actually want to ask you a bit of a legal question, if that's all right.
Mm-hmm.
But the point I was going to talk about this whole thing about the fans, but I got to comment on what you said about how there's a chance that Brett Brown might come back next year.
I didn't say that. That was Keith Pompeo covers the team, yeah.
Well, yeah. I know what you mean now.
Uh-huh.
If they bring him back, then they really do owe a lot to their fans in way of explanation as for why. Because, and the way I look at it, he's been here, however long it's been. I don't know, was it 5 or 6 years? But the last 3 years, when this team has finally gotten to be good and they've been a contender, they've underachieved every single year. How do you underachieve 3 years in a row?
Well, they didn't underachieve last year.
They
got beat on this game 7 on a 4-bouncer.
But I felt they should have been a team that should have gone to the NBA Finals last year.
If that shot doesn't go in, they may have. I mean, who knows? I mean, that was a fluke.
They
could have played for the Eastern Conference Championship. You never know. That game goes into overtime.
All right, but you agree they've definitely radically underachieved.
This year they have, but again, the other side of it is they've had so many interruptions to what they're trying to do. I know what you're saying. If I'm ownership, I can't count on the fans' faith another year because the faith waned going into last year. So I can't do it again to the fan base. I got to change up something.
All right. I can agree with you on that. But I definitely think that he should go no matter what because they're in sixth place. They were supposed to be... At worst, I thought they were going to end up in third place at the very worst this year.
Yeah, there were some misjudgments that were made in the front office, and you're right, there have been some coaching mistakes that enable. But there's also been some injuries. There's been some disjointedness in the team where they're a sixth seed right now, but they're not the sixth best team. You know.
I got you. Anyway, my legal question is this: it's not entirely sports related, but it has to do with the coronavirus. I don't know if you heard about this, but that school down in Virginia, that Liberty University, decided that they were going to be, I think, the only college in the East Coast, and not the whole country.
Jerry Falwell's kid is the president.
And now 10 people have the coronavirus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, if one of those kids happened to die, you know, God forbid, of course, but if somebody did happen to die from the coronavirus, would that family have every right to sue the hell out of that school?
I think you will see lawsuits based on that.
Okay.
Yes. I think that they will come up, some clever lawyers will come up with some legal causes of action to collect civilly.
Just to be clear, just to get the facts straight, they believe that 11 may have it. They have not completed the testing yet, and that would have been after less than 1 week.
Yeah.
Professors and having students come back.
That guy followed the conservative edict of this conservative president when he downplayed the virus. So he's just following the path of certain people in government.
His quote was that a lot of these people live with their grandparents, so why would I send them to their grandparents?
Yeah, it's just ignorance, and it's like this denial that this is a major problem, because a denial that this is a major problem hurts the economy, which hurts this current administration. 610-632-0975. Mike Missinelli Show, 97.5 The Fanatic.
The Mike Missinelli Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
The Fanatic.
329. That's rounded off. It's 330. It's the Mike Missinelli Show. And it is a Monday. We start another week. And our next guest, it's always good to talk to him. He covers the Sixers for the Philadelphia Inquirer, although he is in neutral right now. But he's on the Comcast Business Hotline Beyond Fast. The great Keith Pompey joins us. Hello, Keith.
Hey, what's up, man? How you doing?
Doing good. How are you doing? Life has changed for everybody that's in this business, especially somebody who covers a sport that's in the middle of a season and all of a sudden stops abruptly. So what are you doing these days? How are you covering this sport?
Man, it's rough. It's rough. I mean, you know, it's one of those things, you know, you keep up with it. You're trying to, you know, keep up with the news. Unfortunately for the Sixers, you know, Josh Harris kept us all in, gave us all stuff to talk about and write about last week. And now they're giving us stuff to talk about and write about with his donations. But, you know, outside of that, man, it's just been boring.
Yeah, it is. And I saw you're answering some fan mail, and everybody's got these questions that really can't be answered at this particular time. So you do your best. And I was most interested in the question about Brett Brown and your response to Brett, because we've talked about this on the show about whether he would come back if the season is completely wiped out. And you seem to hold up some optimism for that in your answer to this questioner.
I kind of do. And again, it's not like a lot of optimism, but before it was one of those things where I kept saying, no, he's done. Like, if they don't go far, he's done. And to me now, I'm looking at it from a financial standpoint. I'm also looking at it that right now, you know, a lot of times people tend to make decisions based off of what the people and the fans are saying and word and all this and that. No one's talking about Brett Brown. No one's really talking about the Sixers. You know, they're talking about, do I have enough toilet paper right about now and things like that. Mm-hmm. And with that being said, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, it's going to come down to me if everything's canceled and we know that Josh Harris and the NBA, they're going to lose a lot of money. Are they willing to continue to pay Brett Brown his remaining 2 years and go out there and willing to pay what it's going to cost to get a first-rate coach in here? You know what I mean? Another top-notch coach? Or are they going to say, you know what, Brett? You know, you have months to really figure this out. You know, we saw how Al and Joe played together the last two games. We're going to give you a couple games in October and November, if they come back at that time, to see what you can do. And if not, then we may let you go. We'll probably let you go. So to me, you know, it's based on a monetary type of thing and the fact that, you know, no one's like complaining about Brett Brown. I mean, you know, the way that they used to.
Yeah, but so they know what's out reason. There, Keith. I mean, the same thing about Brett Brown coming into last season. There were some doubters and where the fan base is. They hear, they put their ear out there. They listen to, you know, a lot of their market research is listening to fans who call this show. So let's talk about it in two different ways. Let's talk about the financial part of it. Now, how much money is he making on the last 2 years of his contract?
I mean, it'll be 10.
All right, so 10 mil. Now, this is an owner who is worth $4 billion. He's the 153rd richest man in the world. You think that $10 million would be a factor?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, because it's the same guy who was trying to take 20% from guys who are making anywhere from, like, at least $55,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, I mean, you know, look, dude, I mean, to me, like, again, I said, before, I was 100% where I was saying he was. Now I'm saying there is a little doubt, a little doubt. I'm not saying great doubt. I'm saying a little bit to where as I can see where he would stay. And, you know, again, you know, like, you know, the guy was asking for his people making $55,000 or more a year to give back 20% of their salary for the next couple of months.
Yeah.
When we're talking about $10 million, dude, like, you know, I can see somebody wanting to save $10 million.
And at the expense of maybe, would you think what the percentage of the fan base that is anti-Brett rather than pro-Brett, would that be more than 50% anti-Brett?
I think it would be 50% more anti-Brett. Yeah, I think so. You know, I think so. Now, again, like Mike, don't make it seem like I don't know what the lead-in was. If you were saying, hey, we're going to go after Keith for saying a percentage or stuff like that.
No. I'm just saying, your instincts, my instincts would be the same, by the way, that there are more anti-Brett than pro-Brett at this point. So that has to be measured against the 10 mil that you're going to have to pay out. Could they actually, they know that. They're not, I don't think they're foolish into thinking that the fan base is in his corner more than they're not, right? So that's what I'm saying. Well, you put those two factors together, and how's it come out?
Well, okay, let's think about it. Last year, the fan base was the same way. It hasn't changed. And last year, he went up there to that meeting, and everyone thought that when he was having that meeting, you know, he was going to get the pink slip. He comes out of the meeting, and they say, hey, we never considered getting rid of him. You know what I mean? And
yeah.
To me, it's one of those things where, you know, like, and let's keep it real. It's not all Brett's fault. I mean, now he has made some bad decisions at times, and he'll admit to it. But at the same time, like, they have two centers playing, one playing power forward, the other one playing center. You know, is that Brett Brown's fault? No. Is it also Brett Brown's fault that, you know, Joel Embiid keeps getting hurt and stuff like that? Now, I get it. I get what you're saying. So, but if I'm Brett Brown, I'm going into the office and I'm saying, look, I wasn't the only one making mistakes, you know, and if I'm the owner and you're listening to him and you say, hey, look what we were doing with Al towards the end. You know, we got Shake Milton. I mean, I'm pretty, you know, he's going to politic for himself. He's going to sell himself. And they may say, well, you know what? You're kind of right. Now, again, there is the majority of the fan base who does want him out there, but you know, I don't think that if you're owning if you're a billionaire, and I know you consult with the fans and you like what the fans have to say, everybody wants to be well liked, but you don't basically, you know, run your organization off of what fans want.
No,
say.
But what you do, what I mean? But what you do is keep an ear out to what the customer thinks. Because at the end of the day, he is a customer. Not only in the building where they have raised the price considerably, but outside the building where they're following along on television and they're buying products through their advertising. And like you said, like, things have changed a little, Keith. That you and I can analyze it and go, okay, this happened and that happened, this happened. The customer doesn't analyze it like that. They're the sixth seed. And the majority fan is not looking at, well, they're 16 because Al Horford wasn't as good as they thought, or because this guy got hurt, or that, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I get what you're saying. And, you know, it is what it is. Whatever happens is going to happen. I mean, you know, I'm not sitting here saying, like, he will definitely keep his job. But what I'm saying is there was a point in time where I felt like no matter what, he was gone.
Yeah.
Now there's a point where I'm saying to myself that, you know, with the owners losing all this money, do they really want to commit to someone next year? You know, let's just say if you bring a Jeff Van Gundy or someone like that from the booth, that's going to cost you a lot of money. Mm-hmm. If you go get someone else, it's going to cost you a lot of money. Are you willing to commit to all that? Let's think about this now. They could have kept Jimmy Butler and Tobias Harris. They could have gave both of those guys the max. They could have gave J.J. Redick a buttload of money. Well, they chose to go out there and get Al Horford and just keep one of the two. You understand what I'm saying? And that's economics, man.
Yeah.
That's what it all comes down to. Uh-huh. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
Is an owner going to be willing enough to do that?
I got you.
And I think that's a major question.
We're talking Keith Pompey, covers the Sixers, the Inquirer. Keith, is it feasible with all these ideas that are now coming out that when they get a start date in the future, whatever, they would play the games at one spot, they would play them after another, and there'd be no fans? Is it feasible that this NBA season will resume?
Oh, man, that's a tough one. I mean, you know, because even with that, like, you know, you're still going to have a bunch of people like going in and out of the arena. You know, it's and like it's weird because, you know, the thing is, first of all, you have to get permission from the governor of that state to have that. You know, even and then secondly, to me, it's just one of those things where, you know, it's hard to say just because everything has to go right before that happens. Like, all of a sudden, it's like a couple weeks beforehand or a month beforehand, if another player comes out or someone within the team comes out to be positive, you know, you're going to have to push it back another month. You know, so it's just a tough decision, man, right now. It's just an extremely tough one. Would I love for it to come back? Of course. Yeah, I want basketball. But at the same time, I think everything has to go right. You know, one time we're hearing that, you know, we're going to come back and everybody thought this quarantine was just going to be for a couple weeks. And now they're saying it's going to be to at least until the end of April. And then what else, whatever happens, then when the guys come back, you know, they're going to have to do a training camp. They're going to have to do all this other stuff just to get back in shape again because they're not playing ball. So it's just, it's a lot going on, man. Before, when it first started, you know, I was talking to people around the league and they all seemed optimistic. Now they're saying, wait, they really don't know. I mean, they don't know. Everyone's confused and everybody's just wondering what's going to happen.
Yeah. Last question. You had a story in a few days ago about three people within the organization testing positive. Do you have any update on that?
Nah, I don't. I'm just happy I'm not positive right about now, bro.
All right. I got you. Listen, you take care of yourself. Stay quarantined. We'll look forward to reading your stuff. Thanks for coming on.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. There he is, Keith Pompey.
So it might be. I didn't expect money being a factor, but apparently money might be a factor.
Well, you know, when he frames it in, you know, he ties it in, he didn't sound real happy about that, what the Sixers have done with the pay cut for people. But they rescinded that, though, you know?
Yes.
It's like, does that rehabilitate them as far as the money situation goes?
I wonder, would the people, because of the circumstances, obviously there'd be people who would be angry, but would there be people willing to not spend their money angry? Like, they led the NBA in attendance. Let's assume next year happens. Forget whatever happens this year. Let's assume next year happens. Will there be people that say, you know what? I'm not going to buy tickets. I'm not going to do this and that because of Brett Brown.
Yeah.
And would it be $10 million worth of people? Because if it's $1 million worth of people, they still kind of come out ahead, if economics matter. You get what I'm saying? Like, that's where I wonder. Like, and when it push comes to shove, I think with every sport, we're going to be desperate. Mm-hmm. I hate to admit it, but I think that, like, right now you can have Gabe back with the Phillies. We'd be dying to go.
Yeah.
It won't matter. Yeah. Like,
all right. Two lines are open. You can climb in. 610-622-0975. It is Mike Missinelli Show. Your call is coming up next.
The Mike Missinelli Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Audience 348. Mike Missinelli Show, 97.5 The Fanatic. Coming up at 4 o'clock, our ongoing series, Get to Know 'Em. NBC Sports Philly personalities Derek Gunn today at 4 o'clock. And, of course, controversy surrounds D. Gunn regarding the bragging of his barbecue abilities and his lack of providing those barbecue abilities for his coworkers, Tyrone.
Yes, it's so bad that Booney, recently we talked about this a couple months back, and what Derek Gunn did in response was he brought in ribs for people.
One rib.
And he bought them.
Oh.
Not ribs that he made.
Well, we need to get the, you know, he's messing with people now.
And he's been doing, because he's quarantined like everybody else. He's been out back posting on social media just about every day
a
new thing. And every time his coworkers ask, hey, can we get one?
We'll get to the bottom of that.
Yeah.
Also, coming up, the Fast Cash Contest. We're giving away another $500 at 4 o'clock within the company. And one of our listeners won the first one at 2 o'clock. $500. So congrats. Let's go back to the phones with Ryan in media. Ryan, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Ryan?
Hey, Mike. How's it going?
What's up, Ryan?
Doing good. Just out here working. I called a show on Friday. I work for a utility company.
Oh, yes. And you're doing great work out there, bro.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. And I just got to, first off, I got to say the Brett Brown thing, which I didn't even expect Brett Brown talk today, but that's criminal if they bring him back, I think. I really do.
It's not criminal. I mean, strong criminal, but it would be, wait, so it wouldn't be to your liking. That's a little different.
I don't think it would be. I think you guys are way low on the around 50%. I think you're probably at 75%.
I just wanted to ask the fair question. If it's over the majority, like if it's the majority, basically that's what I'm getting to. And yeah, I think it is the majority. Obviously.
I think it's a heavy majority, and that along with the, you know, they're raising ticket prices, and you know, with that, it's supposed to come a better product. That's supposed to be what you're paying for, and you know, the guys had all sorts of talent coming out of the team from Elton Brand, and I guess they couldn't make it work with Jimmy Butler. But you know, the team hasn't really improved. They definitely haven't improved this season. So
the last thing you're going to know is that they're a sixth seed. You know, and there are legitimate reasons for that, and I get it. It's not, and it might not be his fault. The only thing I'm saying, if you own a team, you have to give your customer a different look every now and then.
Yeah, it's been, what, 7 years now?
Has he been 7 years? Well, yeah.
Yeah, I watched all the games during the tank, you know, because I watch everything. Mm-hmm. And that, I mean, even then, I wanted to talk about the sports with no fans versus, you know, concerts.
Yeah, what do you think?
I agree with you, Mike. I think it would be novel at first. It would be kind of neat at first just to see a game with no fans. It would be kind of cool to hear the players or something. But after... Mm-hmm. After a game or two, especially if you got into playoff basketball and someone hits a dagger of a shot or, you know, then there's just silence. Like, that's so, yeah, well, you know.
At least it would leave me, you know, kind of empty, to be honest.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it even factors in, depending on whether the crowd's in your favor or against you or everything, it factors into how the coaches call the game and whether or not they decide to run a certain play or be more aggressive or, you know, do something. You know, it definitely factors into the game itself more than a scripted performance like a concert or like a, you know, WWE, you know, that kind of thing where the fans are involved a lot, but the whole point of rehearsing a performance like they do is so that it's the same, you know.
Exactly. They button down in rehearsal. And they go, all right, this is the way we're going to play. It's like, you know, occasionally somebody will hit a big balloon beach ball at them, you know, on stage.
Yeah.
That creates a little more excitement. I get it. But see, this is the playoffs. The game production is a lot of what the playoffs are about. And the Sixers do a tremendous job of game production.
Fantastic job.
And the announcer, the PA now, and Matt Cord, and all the everything that generates this kind of energy. I just think that it would not last for people. But, you know. Okay. Kevin in Delaware is next. Kevin, you hang in there. Sean wants to talk about the Villanova 85 championship. Alan, the greatest Philly athletes. Phil the Barber's on the line. And, you know, sometimes you be talking Villanova. I'll bring up an occasional story every now and then.
Yeah, I like that. You have a lot.
And I got a lot of Rolly stories.
I know. I've heard some of them. That one you told earlier, you had never told me.
Oh, really?
You told me
I haven't told you that one?
You had not told me that one. You told me the other ones years ago, but not that.
I tell you, in 4 o'clock, I'll tell you a story. He called me once. I was at the Enquirer office. Phone rings, and he picks up. Mr. Nelly, Rolly's on 3. Rolly? So I pick up the phone. I go, hey, what's up? He goes, listen, I want you to come down to practice today.
All right.
And I go, yeah, woof. I just want to come on down to practice. I go, all right. So in the 4 o'clock, I'll tell you what happened when I went to practice.
That's just, yeah.
610-632-0975. Mike Mussinelli Show back after this.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.